Well, Coins Plus can be reached 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN, through the website at coinsplus.com. So anyway, some people were asking me the other day when we were buying a pretty sizable estate what some of the most expensive coins we've had through here. And in the coin realm, I don't know, there's probably, I guess, maybe 15 or 20 coins out there that are worth a million or more. There's maybe 15, maybe 20 coins in the entire coin arena that are worth over $1 million. I would say that we've had probably five of those, maybe five or six through the shop. A couple of the 1913 Liberty nickels, they only made five. Five are known, so don't think you got one when you find a 1913 Buffalo nickel. We've had two of those. The last one sold for $3.7 million. It wasn't ours when it sold for that. It was one of our clients who had since moved. We've had an 1804 silver dollar, which is an extremely rare coin. They were made pretty much only for dignitaries and stuff. Rumors have it, one 1804 silver dollar is still buried in Montana from the Lewis and Clark expedition, which is ironic because I'm from Great Falls, Montana. And in Lewis and Clark journals, they talk about when they were foraging up the Missouri River, they were being followed by a grizzly bear for way too long. They were learning about the intelligence of grizzly bears and the ruthlessness, and that was making their lives very uncomfortable, to put it lightly. But they got to the falls. Great Falls is obviously a city that's built around some pretty massive waterfalls in the area, and they've now, of course, been filled with dams, which is kind of sad, but, you know, life goes on. But there was a spot where they discuss in great detail when they came to the first set of falls, which is now the Rainbow Falls, again, Rainbow Dam. And they said that on the south side of the river, they buried all their stuff in great big powder kegs. And then when they came back years later to get it, the water was up. They weren't thinking about seasons, and they came in the fall, I think it was, or the spring probably, and the water was up super high. So they'd buried it below a cliff. I know exactly where it is, below a cliff, right on, you know, a side of the river. Well, when the water's way up, you're not getting to it. It's absolutely raging, impossible, terrible stuff. Since then, that cliff has fallen over on it, so there's massive boulders. I mean, huge, like, you know, 15 feet long and 10 feet wide chunks of rock that cover it, and it's right below the dam, and it would be now virtually impossible to excavate because of the location of the dam. But they were carrying an 1804 silver dollar that was given to them as a memorial when they left. They also had some wonderful peace medals in there as they were handing out peace medals from the presidents. One was a Jeffersonian peace medal, some pretty important stuff. And everybody put their watches, their money, their wallets, their guns, a lot of stuff, because they had to take all their boats out of the river. And then they had to walk around the falls. They didn't know how far the falls went, but they could see the mist. The falls were huge. They could see the mist far off. And I think to forage around the falls, you know, they probably had to walk 10 miles through absolutely rugged, nasty country carrying these boats. I'm telling you, folks, the people that chose to go with Lewis and Clark's journey were brutally tough men. That was a tough, tough, tough trip. You know, they didn't have any power back then. They had kerosene and oils and things, but, you know, eventually they'd run out of everything. And, I mean, it gets nasty cold. And, of course, as they headed to the Rockies, they were there for winter. And it was tough. It was brutal. They ended up on the Oregon coast. And, you know, who knows, they accomplished a lot and gathered a lot of information. Came in contact with a lot of Indians and things like that. So there's a little information that one coin brings about. That's the thing with coins. The cool thing about coins, folks, is they were there. Okay. I mean, we get coins from the era of Christ. We have the coins that Christ held up and says, render unto Caesar. I mean, these coins exist. They were there. The neat thing about coins is people held them in their hands. They spent them at the time. There are all kinds of relics. You know, there's old vases and there's old pottery and there's old furniture and once in a while a remnants of clothing or something that turn up. And those are all neat. But coins have a universal sentiment to them. You know, people have the same feeling about coins today as they did 100 or 1,000 years ago. And you understand the importance of money and commerce and in the existence of a society. That's one thing I love about dealing in coins is you get certain coins from, you know, 1799 that are U.S., and you realize our founders very well handled those or could have. I had in my collection for a while a 1796 quarter, which was the first U.S. quarter ever made. They only made 6,000 of them. And, of course, you know, masses of these have been melted. They are all, almost all heavily worn. Some were preserved relatively unworn because there was a guy named Colonel Green way back who collected them and hoarded them up. He ended up preserving quite a few. I mean, you know, I suppose a few dozen of them. And that's why they exist today. But I had one of those in my hands and or in my collection for a while. And, you know, that was minted in Philadelphia in 1796. Only 6,000 issues were made. And that stuff was floating around at the time of, you know, everyone who matters in the establishment of this nation. Okay. That stuff's pretty cool. I had in my possession, in my collection at one time back in the 90s for a while, a 1792 half Disney, D-I-S-M-E. Before we had nickels for 5 cents, we had half dimes, and the half dime derived from the first one, which was made in 1792, which was spelled D-I-S-M-E, because D-I-S is metric for 10, which means it's probably Latin for 10 or Greek for 10. I suspect it's Latin. So it's basically half a 10, a half Disney. And what's ironic, what's special about that coin is it was the very first coin ever minted in the U.S. by the U.S., okay? It was the official Declaration of Independence. The creation of currency coinage is in and of itself a statement of a nation's own sovereignty. When a nation makes its own coinage, it says we are now standing on our own economically, which is ultimately the sign of independence. And in some cases, rebellion, because money makes the world go round, right? Why did Britain want to control us so badly? Money, right? And then they came in with taxation. I mean, they wanted the land, money. That's always the case. Solomon said, money is the answer to everything. And on a grand scale, it often is. So these half dismies, half, which became pronounced half dimes many years later, these particular ones were made of a hand-carved die from a person that George Washington, Ben Franklin, and whoever else was present, I don't recall, commissioned to sculpt it, I guess you'd call it, or to create the die. And then they actually minted these coins in the basement of George Washington's house or somewhere in his house, or maybe it was out in one of his barns. I don't know. But it was made out of Martha Washington's melted silverware. And word is, she was not real happy about that. So I had one of those back in the day when I was collecting an AU, almost uncirculated. I bought it. Believe it or not, for $10,500. I sold it later when I built, I had a construction project, and I sold it for $13,000 in the 1990s. That coin is now probably worth, well, maybe over $500,000. And a few of the other coins I've had in my collections have had the same fate. You know, so obviously I have good taste and I know what's good. The 1796 quarter that I sold, I bought for $27,500. I sold it later for $31,500. It's now probably worth $300,000 plus. But that's been a while. So that's, you know, kind of the history of my coin collection, a little piece of it. I have a pretty good eye for coins. Obviously, I've been doing this a while, and I know those coins sound extremely expensive, and they are. But there's a lot of stuff that performs the same way on a much smaller scale. There's a lot of coins that just have a really nice reactive nature to various markets. If you've listened to me long enough, you've probably realized I have a real thing for the Morgan Silver Dollar. It's my baby. I specialize in them. I grew up in Montana, and we've bought numerous, numerous collections out of Montana, the silver dollar capital of the world, really. Ironically, for a state with such a low population, they've certainly had a massive amount of silver dollars that were shipped there and possessed by people in that state. And we do a lot with those, all the way from bulk generic stuff, you know, that run under $20 a piece, all the way up to silver dollars that are 20,000 and up. I think, you know, right now we've got a coin in stock, a 1889 Carson City, the rarest Carson City, in the neighborhood of 20 grand or a little less than that. But that same coin, not that one, but the same grade, AU58, I sold, over the years that I've been in business, I've sold all the way from 20 years ago the same coin for about similar type of coin for $2,000 and then $5,000 and then $9,000 and now it's up to $20,000. So some of, you know, there's good investment potential there. So we're always looking when we build portfolios, I talk about it a lot. We balance them out. We use a precious metals base, if you will. Gold and silver is pretty obvious. A lot of people that come in with larger amounts of money, they want gold. I talk about gold a lot. I use the word gold a lot. I think that kind of brainwashes people a little bit to think that I mean gold. What I use the word gold because it's the shortest, easiest way to refer to what we deal in. But what I'm really referring to is the entire sector of our industry. I personally would not have a portfolio of just precious metals. It's frankly not well balanced or diversified. I think we recommend precious metals. We recommend semi-numismatic coins in a portfolio, and then we recommend some numismatic coins. Precious metals are a no-brainer, right? And people often ask, "What is bullion?" Bullion is just where you are paying for the specific intrinsic value of the item. In other words, if you have a 1 ounce of gold coin, that's only worth the ounce of gold plus a few percent. That's bullion. Ironically, semi-numismatic means that it's going to trade near its precious metals value, but it has far more potential. Once that potential is wholly realized, in other words, once it becomes more collectible than its intrinsic value, then it becomes a numismatic coin. And so there are coins in a market like this, and for those of you who've been around in life, you know that you want to buy low and sell high. You look at the stock market now, and if you pay much attention, even though stocks are dangerous speculative vehicles, you may go, if I had bought that stock back in 2009, I sure would be doing dandy today. And the same applies to our industry. There's lows and highs, right? The markets swing and they go down and they go up. And ironically, almost unbelievably, the coin market has 10-year downs and 10-year ups. It's been documented for 140 years. The peak of the coin market was 2007. Believe it or not, the low in the coin market was 2017. And now we're heading back up. We're moving into a 10-year uprise. Precious metals. I was listening to some experts the other day that aren't, you know, that are stock experts, equity experts, paper experts, and they're predicting a commodities explosion but beginning in about 6 months. They said we're going to see a commodities explosion within about 6 months. I believe that to be true. I believe we're going to be moving into a different style of a precious metals and coin bull market. It's not going to be as hype-driven as the past. It's not going to be as speculative. The reason that we're going to see, I think, some very heavy movement in these items is because of inflation, okay? So what's happened, folks, is Obama literally inundated this economy with cash at a level you cannot believe. I mean, to really go from a deficit of $5 trillion, okay, that the Bush administration had created. And by the way, they took that bad boy from like $2 trillion to $5 trillion. Okay, that sounded pretty expensive, you know, a $3 trillion increase in the deficit because of post-9/11 stuff. And it was extraordinary. It was ridiculous. Now, Obama took us from $5 trillion, a little over $5 trillion, to literally $20 trillion. Obama claims that he adopted a deficit of $9 trillion, and the reason that he's using this the way he is because they forced George Bush to do the first bailout before Bush left office. Well, looking back, it's pretty obvious why they did that. Apparently, they wanted to hang the noose around Bush's neck to put this huge bailout on him so that no matter what, they could blame him for the big deficit. So if you talk to those who get technical about the dates and don't look at the actual activities, they'll tell you that Obama started with a $9 trillion deficit and ran it to 20. Still, record levels, beyond ridiculous. But the truth is he started affecting it in the $5 trillion and ran it up to $20 trillion, basically. So he created an amount of money that is absolutely unbelievable, folks, unbelievable. Numbers that you just can't even comprehend. And if you think about the fact that he's, I'm going to do the math here real quick. You got 300 million people, $50,000. So the increase in the deficit under Obama increased the debt, just the deficit, not unfunded liabilities. That's another big dog out there. He increased the debt on each one of us, every man, woman, and child in America, $50,000. That's just what he increased it. When we break that down by a family of four, it's $200,000 in deficit per family of four. Obama was spending $1 trillion a year overseas, okay? So he was spending $3,300 a year per man, woman, and child. A family of four, he was spending about $13,000 a year per family of four. Year after year, overseas, that's just one sector. He wanted money out of here. He pumped it out of here. He did not like America. He was operating the Cloward and Piven strategy. He was doing everything right to break the back of this nation. In a way, it's a miracle that Trump can stimulate it the way he can, but one of the ways he's doing this is by paying no attention to the deficit. I mean, I'll be honest with you. He's just going along with the way the game is played. We're at a position in this country where everybody is so foolish, they don't even understand what's necessary, and nor do they understand what the problem really is. And so these politicians, all they care about is popularity in the polls and getting reelected, and so they don't attack the real issue. Ted Cruz, I believe, would have. Ted Cruz might have been a pretty tough president, in a good president in a lot of ways, but tough. He might have been somewhat fair, etc. But a little bit off, you know, just a little bit different. We, you know, a good constitutionalist is a good thing, but we're in a position now where we're riding the runaway train. Now, you look at the strength of the American military and all this stuff. Yeah, it's darn impressive. I mean, the money we've spent, we're the best. There's no question. But ultimately, that bill's got to be paid. And so where I was going with this is all of that money that Obama infused into the economy as deficit, as debt, is now out there somewhere. Right? It's debt. It's borrowed, but the money's floating around. He pumped a lot of it overseas. It's all out there. So what's happening is the fundamental definition of inflation is an increase in the money supply. Obama did that, and believe me, there was nothing accidental about it whatsoever. He did it absolutely on purpose, period. That's exactly what his goal was. And he was very effective at it. So that money now has created inflation. So that is one of the prime reasons we're seeing why that Trump has the ability to generate the levels of growth that he does. The biggest problem is, again, it's inflation, right? We've seen interest rates go up. We have got a promise of 4 interest rate increases coming this next year. Mortgages have gone up. They're going up much higher. Times are going to get rough. This is why I believe that the experts are predicting huge commodities explosions. Copper is an interesting metal. It's used in construction. It's used in a lot of frontline fundamental operations. It's a utilizable consumable metal. It gets consumed and used in industry. It has increased 31% in the last 6 months. It's an indicator of what's to come. If we look at the precious metals that we deal in, they're up about 15%, I think, in about the last year since Trump got in, maybe right around there, 12 to 15%. I mean, that's not bad, especially when you consider we're at the bottom of the market. When we're at the bottom of the market and gold's in the 13s, silver's in the 17s, I mean, to me, that's fairly impressive. I remember vividly fantasizing years back if gold hit $1,000, how crazy that would be. And yet now people think $1,300 gold is cheap. And they're right in a way, because with an inflation-adjusted margin on it, in other words, if you look at the metals and you say, based on historical norms, going back 500 years, based on the buying and spending power of the metals, based on its biblical endorsement and authorization, therefore the fact that it's here to stay until the end of the end, what is it worth, okay? Believe it or not, based on buying power and ratios of metals to humans, and by the way, the amount of above-ground gold and silver, folks, has remained almost static for thousands of years. We have records going back even to the time of Solomon, right? Which is whatever, that 3,500 years ago or whatever it is. We have records of the amount of gold and silver that was on earth at the time, within reason, right? And the ratio of metals to man, to the population, is almost identical to what it is today. So it's about 0.3 of an ounce of gold, and I think the number's around 5 ounces of silver, 5.5 ounces of silver per man, woman, and child on Earth. So the per capita quantity of the metal remains static. It's interesting that God did it that way. God buried it in the earth a certain way. We have to mine it a certain way. Silver gets consumed a certain way at a certain pace. As the population increases, the technology for mining increases. As the in-ground quantities decrease and the technology goes up, they're able to continue mining it, but there becomes less and less and less that they can pull out of the earth. So it becomes relatively equal per capita, and I've probably beat that horse enough. But the point is, it stays static. It's real money. It's the way God made it. It's a really cool system. the argument against metals is one of the primary ones, which is completely deceptive, has always been, well, you have to have an infinite amount of money available to make. There cannot be a limited supply of money. This is the argument for fiat currency, for the central banking system. So they just make more and more and more. Well, what happens when you make an infinite supply? You have infinite inflation. You have an infinite loss in spending power. When the dollar was backed by gold and silver, the U.S. Coinage Act, which was started in 1792, that's where we get the to counterfeit is death, essentially, or to debase our currency, you shall be put to death. We forgot that when the Roosevelts came around. From 1792 to the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, which is roughly 120 years, the spending power of the dollar had gone up fivefold. So what took a dollar to buy in 1792 could be bought at the turn of the century for about 20 cents. What took a $20 bill could be bought for $4. What took a $100 bill in 1792 could be bought for $20. This is how strong the dollar got, because it was backed strictly by metals. We were the most desirable currency on earth. In fact, our dollars were so pure and so solid that Mexico in Spain would literally send shiploads of their 8 reales, which were supposed to have the same amount of silver in them as ours, although ours had a little bit more because we wanted to make ours that much better, but it actually was a significant quantity more. It was 420 versus 460 grains, so it was a 10% more silver. They would send over a shipload of their equivalent to a dollar size coins and swap them for ours. The problem is they would intentionally debase the purity of their coins. Instead of making them 90% pure, they'd make them like 65, 70% pure. And ours were 10% more anyway. And they were supposedly had on par with each other. They supposedly had the same equal spending power. They would literally come in with shiploads of their dollars and trade them out for our dollars. And just the silver gain alone was like a 70% profit, 60 to 70% profit. That's when we reduced the silver content of our dollars, because they were doing this. It was foolish. That's also the genesis of a number of shipwrecks of these coins that are still at the bottom of the ocean in some cases. But that's, our dollar was that good. I mean, it was that good. America was that great. We were built on the firmest foundational Judeo-Christian ethics and standards. These were a group of men who wanted to be the best of the best. They wanted to establish a nation like never before. They wanted to do it the right way. They wanted to write it up in an experimental fashion so that if any aspect of their government system failed, it was editable. It was, they could, you know, as we would think now, they could rewrite the code on the U.S. Constitution. They could change and adapt and grow. They were brilliant. They were scholars. They were articulate. They were phenomenally read in history. And folks, I'll tell you, in business, as spending years in banking and analyzing businesses and having my own business experience, the number one way to succeed in business over time in changing market climates is the willingness to adapt, okay? In fact, that applies to everything in life, the willingness to change and adapt. If you get in your rut and you just sit and you do and you don't change, okay, you don't grow, you ultimately will fail. Humans are dynamic. We are always growing one way or the other. We're going up or we're going down, okay? God gives us a set of rules and expectations to live by, and if we obey and follow those, we grow in an upward fashion. If we shift away from those and we fall away, we grow away. Our founders understood this clearly. They had debates over who God was, but they did not have debates over if God was, if you follow me. Anymore, this is the debate. Is God real? Does he exist? Why would God allow this? Why would God allow that? They created the Constitution to be adaptable and changeable and editable. All right. And this is where a number of our amendments have come from, is the need to adapt and change. There is always the threat of political correctness, where the pressure gets so grand that politicians cave to the whims of the people. We have now been brainwashed to think that we live in a democracy. We do not. This is a republic. A republic has a foundational set of principles and rules and regs and laws, and we have a democratic form of election, but our government itself is supposed to be the concrete foundation that does not change. When you tell people that it's a democracy, what a democracy does is it empowers 51% to vote and take from the 49 or do worse, okay? But when you impose a socialistic mentality as we have in this nation, and then you say it's a democracy, you get things like this upcoming generation that chooses socialism as viable a form of government as, quote, democracy, which was a huge college study that took place a few years back and on countless campuses. They literally interviewed tens of thousands of college students, and it was a difference of 47% and 49%. Literally 50-50 were choosing socialism to democracy. The problem is the question was posed wrong, because the question said democracy versus socialism versus whatever else. We're not a democracy. We are a republic. And people don't understand that. But what a wonderful way to take this country apart from at the seams is to tell people it's a democracy. It's run by our opinions. This is what's happening now. When you give the media an incredible amount of power, and believe me, they do, the First Amendment gives them the right to spew whatever they want to spew, okay? Left-wing liberal bias in the media is out of control. 96% of journalists consider themselves liberal. That's a fact. That's a real number. I've read it. It's been a while, but I'll tell you, 96% consider themselves liberal. How is that a balanced opinion? How is that an unbiased opinion or perception of what they see? On top of that, I recently did a show, which I threw the papers out, and I wish I didn't now, but I did a show where I discussed the fact that recent studies show that journalists in general are far less stable than the average citizen. They're far more likely to be persuaded by their bias. They tend to be more conspiratorial. They're less intelligent. They have a lower rate of performance. I mean, they're not America's cream of the crop. And they lack objectivity, we'll say. They can't see things clear. Just a fact. I'm not just spewing my opinion. Conservative journalists are crushed. Conservatives are crushed in this nation, folks. The pressure that rests upon the back of a conservative is brutal. It is just brutal, and it's gotten so far out of control. When you think of the fact that we, quote, shut the government down, right? We shut the government down this weekend. The lefties did. Why? DACA. What's DACA? The Dreamer Act, right? Which doesn't come due till March 8th anyway. However, we had a budget proposal which had everything the left wanted. They had no objection to one thing that was in that bill. No objection to anything in it. They were objecting to what was not in it. And you and I both know that they were grandstanding. It was a political correct appeal to try to take the focus off of all of Trump's great successes. They wanted to remove people's focus from his tax plan and the good that that will do. You've got the media out there talking about Donald Trump as if he's insane. He took a cognitive test. I don't know if you saw last week. the doctor gave him a review of Shining Colors in Health. The same White House doctor who had tended to Obama and Bush has also tended to Trump. And he gave Trump an absolute glowing report. He said there's no sign of heart disease. He's a tad overweight, but he's a big man. He's about 6'3", I think. I'm not sure. Big guy. But they said he's glowing. He's never drank. He's never smoked. And apparently that's really showing up in his body and his health. So they come on. And then he took a cognitive test because people were trying to say he was insane. And he took the hardest cognitive test available. And he scored 30 out of 30. So when he jokingly said recently that he's a stable genius in a tweet, he is. He actually was right. But people say, and people I know that know Trump personally, and I do, I don't know him, but I know people who do, they say that he's got a really dry sense of humor. They say that he's just got a funny sense of humor. It's very dry. You have to understand it. And the media is so offended. I always think, and I think it's in Proverbs 26, where it essentially says, don't you yourself, you know, basically a fool is easily offended. And, you know, a wise man tries not to offend, basically. So the moral of that is don't be easily offended and try not to offend others. And yet the media is so easily offended. They're ridiculous. They're emotional wimps. They're wrong. They're not seeking the truth. Truth is great stuff, folks. It's powerful, powerful stuff, and they're avoiding it. So where I was going a minute ago is the fact that we are facing an inflation rampage coming forward. Just a fact. There is a massive plethora of cash that has been infused into our system and overseas. Well, now Donald Trump with his new tax plan is opening the door for the repatriotization of cash. That means that corporations that have money overseas can get it back into the United States at a greatly reduced tax rate. I believe the tax rate's 11%. They wanted 10, it got bumped to 11. But these are amounts of money that would have prior been taxed through C corporations at 55%. What corporation would ever bring money back from overseas at 55%? Believe it or not, this is what they arrested Paul Manafort for, bringing cash that he'd been paid by Russia, which he did business with Russia legally, bringing cash into the United States, they say, in a tax evasive way. So what he would do is buy incredible things, expensive pieces of art and phenomenal statues and just say beautiful, amazing watches or assets of value. He would spend the money overseas and then he would import them into the United States. Whether he did or did not pay customs, I don't know, but that's up to customs, not him. But the fact is they said, oh, that's tax evasion. Well, is it? If your money is overseas and you buy an asset and you bring it back to the United States and you pay customs on it, or at least you import it legally and you follow all the rules, is that tax evasion? I don't think so. But this is what this Mueller, witch hunt is all about. This Mueller probe looking for Russia collusion. It's very, very obvious there's absolutely no collusion. It's very obvious that the Obama administration, while Hillary Clinton was running, was abused the power of government to such excess by using a false dossier paid for by the Clinton campaign and possibly in part by the FBI. They filled with absolute salacious, erroneous, trumped up information. They used that for the FBI to obtain a FISA warrant. Okay. Now the FBI was in on it. They wanted to prevent Trump from winning. The corruption ran rampant. James Comey, the director of the FBI, admitted himself that he wanted to create an independent counsel against Trump. I mean, these people are trying to sabotage our nation. Because to sabotage a president is to sabotage the nation. The media is single-handedly responsible for the teardown of this man, for the false information. Thank goodness for Twitter. I believe that Donald Trump now has like 160 million followers on Twitter. That, my friends, is a little bit of pull. He can swing markets with that. He's got some pull. Had it not been for that, he would not be able to access you and me fairly whatsoever. The media hates it. The left rampages about his tweets. Even the right rampages about his tweets. He's brilliant. I want you to think back to Charlie Sheen. Do you remember winning? Charlie Sheen made people apparently think he was crazy, if you recall. This was years back. I don't remember how many. Probably 5-6 years ago. Winning, everyone thought he was crazy. He was all over every newscast. Every newscaster was going after him. He'd show up for interviews and they'd sneak a drug test on him. And then when he'd pass the drug test and they'd say, "How'd you do that? We know you're on drugs. How'd you do that?" He'd say, "I'm not on drugs." And then he'd go to another interview. And that interviewer would get some drug specialist and say, Oh yeah, he fooled that drug test, but he won't fool mine. So when he'd show up, they'd sneak up on him and say, "Will you agree to a drug test right now?" And he'd say, "Sure." And he'd pass another drug test. Remember, he said he had tiger's blood and all this stuff. And he was literally, because he had been fired by whatever the studio was where he was doing his sitcom recordings, because the studio director or producer, whatever it was Jewish. And he made a comment about his Jewishism, a crude comment, a derogatory comment. And everybody was like, "Oh my gosh, who would, you know?" And so they started to go after him. And you know what? I'll never forget. He's sitting in these interviews and he's got this smirk on his face and they'd be asking him all these crazy questions and he'd go, "Winning." And everybody's like, "Oh, he's crazy." No, he was sending signals, probably to people he knows. See, when you're a celebrity, all news is good news, right? As long as you're in the media being covered, you are desired. You are known and you are desired. And to them, having your name known, now I'm not saying good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just telling you the way it is. To be known is to prosper. When you're a celebrity, this is why he did it all. Charlie Sheen was brilliant. And he was saying winning because he was winning as long as his name was out there. And you might think, no, he didn't. He ruined his reputation. Well, he's got a different set of standards because before he lost his job, he was making $1 million an episode, the highest paid TV star ever. After all that, he renegotiated a contract for $2 million per episode. So for each sitcom episode Charlie Sheen records, he gets $2 million. Now, you might say, who cares? He's a whack job. Money this, money that. Well, you're right. But he lives by his set of standards, and his set of standards is public, I wouldn't say adoration, but public awareness perhaps. Well, Donald Trump, in an odd way, is in the same boat. Donald Trump, I believe, understands that as long as his name is in the limelight, he is known. I won't use the word famous because he's already famous, but he knows that when his name's out there, he's in the limelight. Scaramucci, the mooch, who for a period of time was his press advisor, who was replaced by Sandra Huckabee Sanders or Sarah Huckabee, whatever it is. He made the comment in an interview in the last few weeks that Trump has everybody right where he wants them. He said, has the media. He said, when they're up in arms and they're outraged every day, screaming and yelling and moaning and complaining and attacking him, this is what Trump wants. Why? Because he wants everyone to see, according to the Mooch, Scaramucci, he wants everyone to see how disingenuous the media is. He wants everyone to know how biased and unfair they are. This is why fake news. And folks, it is fake news. If you watch that Bob Costa, you know, at the White House, I mean, just the wretched, rotten, impolite, unprofessional questions. You know, FDR would not even allow the press corps in the White House. All of the questions were handled in writing, period. And yet these people are allowed to mob and maul the White House and abuse President Trump in a sick way. The CNN correspondent is so arrogant and so self-righteous, yet guess what? He's using the Charlie Sheen method too. He goes back to the office, he posts these YouTube videos where he brags about himself and he acts kind of half nuts. And guess what? Everyone follows this guy, even though I think he's kind of a scumbag. But that's the world they live in. So that's good. We got the State of the Union coming up with Trump, and hopefully he does a beautiful job. Hopefully he is very diplomatic and articulate. He's not known for his great speaking ability, but I hope that he does a nice job. I'd like people to know what's going on. I mean, things are changing in this nation, frankly. Last show last week, I had a list of some of the accomplishments of Donald Trump. Pretty impressive. I've got a lot of different stuff to cover. You got California is requiring illegal immigrants to vote now. They're giving them driver's licenses for IDs and saying that they can now vote. This was something I heard last week. I about fell out of my chair. But yes, illegal immigrants will now be allowed to vote. This, my friends, is exactly the purpose of the Democrats wanting to let them come in here. This is also the reason why they have fought identification requirements for voting, because the illegal immigrants don't have an ID. Well, now California solved that problem by issuing IDs to illegal immigrants. We got the new Amazon Go store in Seattle. The Scan and Go store is up, folks. It's Big Brother. Everything is monitored and picked up. Everything you pick up off the shelf is monitored. The one problem they have, if you pick it up and put it back, great. If you put it back later, great. But the biggest issue they have that's screwing up the store is kids coming in and picking up items and moving them to other parts of the store where they don't belong. That's a concern, apparently. Apparently, when you check out, this place keeps a good record of what you got. It is Big Brother. People talk about privacy. They're right. But I guess if you want, you know, if you want to shop there, you know, you're giving that up. We've got, you know, governors and our elected officials state by state, like Jerry Brown in California, choosing to ignore laws, especially federal immigration laws, while citizens like you and I have to obey them. We saw Hillary Clinton just turn her back on a number of laws to break, you know, to burn her emails up after they were under subpoena. It's pretty sad. There is no substitute for time in life, folks. And, the millennials are so used to an app for everything. But nothing, replaces time as far as is an asset of value. That's the biggest problem that we're facing now in this nation, is everybody wants quick this and quick that. Everything is immediate gratification. Instant gratification is what we want. And yet this is where you get unqualified employees that want more money. They want bigger job titles, but they don't care how well they perform. So one thing technology will never change is time to learn, time to grow. And it just takes time. You're born a child, you have to go through life, and you've got to grow and mature and hopefully become a good member of society. We are in an era of anti-male sexism. I think some of you may be aware of that. I could go into that more, but I won't. It's in direct contradiction of the natural meritocracy. In other words, you get promoted based on performance. It doesn't matter what sex you are if you get promoted or hired based strictly on your abilities. You would think people would want that rather than forcing special rights because of a skin color or a sex. So, you know, those are just some highlights. I got some other notes that I could go over, but I won't. Trump last week, I discussed the fact that we've got, you know, he's really boosted jobs in the economy. He's really fighting to get rid of certain job killing and job stifling regulations. He's working on a much more fair trade in this nation. He's trying to boost our energy dominance. He opened up Anwar, which is the northern area of, you know, wild millions of acres filled with some of the largest oil reserves on earth that the left has fought us doing any mining or drilling at. He's doing a good job of protecting our homeland. He's protecting our communities with the Department of Justice. He's keeping people accountable in government, I think. And then we've got the opioid war, which is a little bit scary because the drug war to me is just a big mess. He's restoring confidence and respect for this nation in a way that maybe some people don't like it. He's promoting peace through strength, and that's really the best way to be recognized as a nation. He's helping veterans finally, and he is working to protect the sanctity of life. So if you get out of control on him or you get frustrated, don't let your friends trash talk the guy, folks. Realize he's got every force in nature against him. Just stand behind him. He's our president, and he's who he is, and he's doing a heck of a job. There was no other options that were ultimately probably better for what he's doing. I did touch at the beginning of the show briefly, folks. I really believe it's a great time to deal with your money. I don't care if it's 401ks, IRAs, pensions, whatever it is. First of all, the red warning bell. Do not buy an annuity. Please. I've discussed this over and over on the show. People still do it. They get that salesman sitting in front of them, and what do? They listen to deception. It has nothing to do with what I do, folks. It has to do with what I know. Don't think that I'm trying to spew my bias up here. I really want truth. I seek it. I'm balanced. I'll tell you the truth about anything from my perspective. But folks, giving your money to an insurance company when they say, oh, we'll hang on to it and we'll give you back your money someday later. And by the way, once they've got it, it's locked up. It's really difficult to get out. Why do they fight people so hard in getting their money out? Because the commissions are tremendous, and they have residual income off of that money. If you're an annuity, get out. You're not making any money, folks, none. We've taken people out of substantial annuities and literally doubled their money for them. We've got right now people who want to roll out their money. It's a great time. You've got 16 months before any taxes due, okay, you've got a much lower tax rate under Trump, so you're going to pay half of what you would have paid in the past or less, okay, depending on the amount of money. If it's a large amount of money, you'll pay half of what you would have paid before. If it's a smaller amount of money, like 25 grand or something like that, you're going to pay way less, like a sixth of what you would have paid. So your rates are amazing, and you got 16 months of growth. You got a market that's hot and ready to roll. In fact, it's already kind of getting some steam built up. It's a good market. You want to buy low. You want to buy when the market's got value. Let everybody else throw their money in the garbage on this stock market craze. It'll last a little while. I mean, but that doesn't mean it's a good thing. It's a foolish thing. And when it goes, it's going to go hard. So give us a call at 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through the website at coinsplus.com. We really would love to help you out. We're good at it. We'll build you a great portfolio. We've got a tremendous inventory, and we're really doing people right. We're doing for you what I would do for me. Sometimes it takes us a little time because I'm digging through my stuff to build for you. So thanks for tuning in. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.